For decades, Elizabeth Elliot has influenced many people through her books, timeless teaching, and courageous faith. She shares with us what she's learned as a daughter, wife, mother, and missionary on this radio program, Gateway to Joy. Let's join Elizabeth now as she encourages us once again to live life to its fullest as disciples of Jesus Christ.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot talking with you again today, talking with my husband and you again today. And I'm so glad that Lars is able to be here. And I think it would be very interesting to my listeners, Lars, if you would tell us a little bit about your background. You were telling us yesterday some things that happened when you were a grown man. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Norway. And I guess what you're aiming at, perhaps, is the way in which changes occur in a life that have a major influence in where you end up, the providences of God. And I think it's comparable to always read that passage where the Israelites set up stones, and when they were asked, you know, what the purpose of the stones, so that they could tell the children that here's where God had met them, and stones of remembrance. And I'm not much of a thinker for the future. I don't do a whole lot of thinking about that, but I do look back, and it amazes me that here I'm sitting here as your husband with all of the different aspects of vocations and changes in where I lived, and all of it fitting together to bring me up to a certain point. And I guess Norway is interesting for the fact that it was through a odd circumstance of the Second World War that I wound up staying with my grandparents for 10 years. My folks lived in this country, and I was over there. And I'm so grateful for that time, because I had grandparents who were godly and wonderfully loving and kind, and they really put the foundation of life in me at that early age. I often have said that had I stayed closer to what my grandfather and grandmother had taught me and cautioned me towards and tried to guide and direct me, why, I would have escaped some of the hard knocks that, although there haven't been very many, but some of the hard knocks in life that you'd rather would have avoided. But in 1946, when I came to this country, my folks and family, after a year in New York, we moved down to southern Mississippi to be farmers. And I really enjoyed that. In fact, just those few years on a farm later on when I was going to college caused me to go take a course in animal husbandry. And I had all intentions of going back onto a farm. Of course, right at that point, I could say, had I gone there, well, I wouldn't be here. But when I got through school, I joined the Navy, and here I thought again, well, that looked like a pretty good career, and got out of that. And there were many instances when I had different things to do, and I always thought, well, I'll do this for a few years and then see what happens. And I had in the back of my mind, ever from the time when I was about 14 or maybe a little bit younger, that maybe there was a Christian vocation or something to do with that for life. It seemed to me that I was always looking towards that or searching towards that, and never really going to the point of following through on it. But the most amazing thing was a chance meeting on a golf course in Florida. At the time when I was in the clothing business, I also traveled Florida, and I was down there for a few days. And a friend of mine, Bob Turner, asked me if I wanted to have a game of golf. He said he had a preacher from North Carolina that was in for a day or two, and if I wanted to join them, I could. So I did. And on that one golf game, I met Calvin Thielman from Montreat, North Carolina. And it was a fun day, good game of golf. We seemed to hit it off. And I began, whenever I would travel North Carolina, I would always stop off in Montreat and see him and maybe spend a night or just a few hours with him. And over a period of a year or two, we talked more and more about life and about vocations and what matters in life. And I remember thinking that, well, what does it matter if you sell clothes for the rest of your life? There's nothing wrong with that, but what gain is there in it other than making a good living? And it was in August of 73 that I happened to be there when he asked me where I was going, and I said, well, I'm going to go to New York and pick up the samples for the next season. And he said, well, I have a professor who's a friend of mine up at Gordon-Conwell. He said, why don't you take an extra day and go up there and take a look at the school? He said, I think you ought to think about getting out of the business and go to seminary for a year, and if you can do it, fine. If nothing comes of it, it'll be good training, and you can always go back to selling clothes. In about the period of 2 weeks, I had retired from the clothing business, rented my house in Atlanta, and came up to begin school. And of course, as we discussed yesterday, that's where we met. But when you think of that, small little things, but just the fact that the golf game in Florida was pivotal to my leaving and going to seminary and meeting you.
It is a staggering thing, isn't it? And the more I contemplate the sovereignty of God, the more mysterious and wonderful it seems to be. And the fact, of course, that one other man had already said that he might want that room, and then you showed up, and of course, neither you nor I had any idea what this was going to lead to. I had been speaking and writing books for some years. Of course, I had to take care of my husband, Ad, until he died, so I wasn't doing a lot of traveling at that point. But never crossed my mind when you moved into my house. Certainly, it never crossed my mind that I was going to marry you, and it never crossed my mind that you would even have any particular gifts that would be helpful to me. And now I think of all the thousands of miles that we've traveled and the books that Lars has carried along and lugged back and forth, and the tickets that he gets, takes care of, the phone that he answers so that I don't have to. And he's not a stuffy sort of a man who wouldn't want people to realize that he's just doing these mundane things. You're a man with no particular agenda of what you should be or what you should look like, but I'm just so grateful for this huge blessing that has been bestowed on me because you moved into my house one day.
Well, I remember you mentioning reading a short story one time, A good man is hard to find. Maybe I ought to retitle that about myself and do an autobiography. A good gopher is hard to find.
Well, I'm so thankful. Very thankful.
Well, it's just been a pleasure, always. There's nothing I would rather do than what we do now. And, of course, as some of your listeners know, that our life on the road and our life at home is completely different. It is really like night and day.
Well, you lived in my house for 2 years, and then after you moved out of my house at my request, I really didn't expect to see much of you again. But it didn't work that way, did it?
No, by that time, I had felt that a stronger urge to have more time with you and at least get to the point where I would say, will you marry me? And then find out whether you would say yes or no. And then from that time, I'd go on to what the next thing would be.
I was in a little cabin down on Cape Cod, and I got a phone call from you one day in that summer, and you said, I'd like to come down to see you. May I? So I said, sure. So the little red car showed up in this little cottage on Cape Cod, where I was writing a book, actually. I was working on a book for my daughter, Valerie. And you came, and we had a nice dinner together, and we talked. And lo and behold, during that evening, you pulled out a tiny little square box from your pocket, and I almost fainted. I thought, oh, my goodness, don't tell me he's brought me an engagement ring, because you hadn't asked me to marry you. But tell us what you brought in that little box.
Well, I had made up my mind that it was time to at least make a declaration. So I figured by then you pretty well knew what in the world I was after. And we had never, of course, talked about it. And it's not like these young people of today, they talk about getting married or how our relationship, what our relationship is. Figure if you didn't know by then that I was courting you, why I was either very naive or too dumb to know. So I had taken my grandmother's wedding ring, which I had, and brought that along because I figured that particular weekend I would at least make it known that I was officially trying to have you for a wife.
And on that, we have to stop, but we'll have some more tomorrow.
Anything, if offered to God, can and will become your gateway to joy. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.